Oyez. Silence is commanded on pain of imprisonment while the honorable justices of the Supreme Court of Virginia are sitting. All persons having business with this court will draw near and give their attention. Any having pleas to enter or suits to prosecute, let them come forward and they shall be heard. God save the Commonwealth and this honorable court.
Please be seated. Good morning and welcome to this session of the Supreme Court of Virginia. I am Chief Justice S. Bernard Goodwin. All of the justices of the court are present, along with Senior Justice Charles Russell and Senior Justice Leroy Millette, who are sitting because of two current vacancies on our court. The audio of this session is being live streamed on a link which can be accessed at the Supreme Court of Virginia website. Welcome, everyone. Please call the first case.
Coxcom LLC, DBA Cox Communications Northern Virginia versus Fairfax County et al., Matthew O. Gatewood, Eric S. Tresh, Alla Rakin, Simon Dagger, Appellant's Counsel, Daniel Robinson, Senior Assistant County Attorney, Appellee's Counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court. Matthew Gatewood on behalf of Appellant Coxcom LLC, which the parties are going to refer to as Cox in short. And it's my pleasure this morning to introduce Mr. Eric Tresh, my colleague from the state of Georgia, who's going to be presenting our argument.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. As Mr. Gatewood said, my name is Eric Tresh, and I thank you for the opportunity to appear here today. May I please reserve 5 minutes of my time for a rebuttal?
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, this case is about the Federal Internet Tax Freedom Act and whether it prohibits Fairfax County's business, professional, and occupation license tax, the BPOL tax, from being imposed on receipts from Internet access. The short answer is it does. I'd like to begin by providing some background about the Internet Tax Freedom Act, a few important facts. First, the reason why the Internet Tax Freedom Act was enacted in 1998 was because at that time, Congress recognized that there were about 30,000 different taxing jurisdictions in the United States that could apply their tax to Internet access. Now, in light of those 30,000 taxing jurisdictions, Congress went ahead and they preempted all taxes on Internet access. Congress wanted to make sure that those 30,000 taxes that could be imposed on Internet access didn't stifle the growth of the Internet, electronic commerce, and lose the opportunity to create jobs and investment in electronic commerce. Now, with that as background, this broad preemption that we have where Congress preempted all taxes on Internet access, I'll next turn to the trial court's rulings, in this case, that are subject of today's appeal. Your Honor, the trial court began by ruling as a matter of law that the BPOL tax was a tax on Internet access as that phrase is used in the Internet Tax Freedom Act. The reason the court ruled that way was because of this court's ruling in the Dulles Duty Free case. In the Dulles Duty Free case, this court held that the BPOL tax, in that case it was the Loudoun County BPOL tax, but that the BPOL tax was a direct tax on goods.
Can I interrupt you for a second? Right out of the starting blocks, is this statute, the general prohibition, supposed to be narrowly construed, broadly construed, or just plain meaning construed? And I take it that the arguments you made on brief is that this is a preemption issue. It's not really an exemption to a generalized federal tax statute. Did you find any cases identifying how, when something is preempted under the Supremacy Clause, that the conventional canons of statutory interpretation and governing taxing statutes have a different context?
Nothing particular to taxing statutes, Your Honor. The conventional concepts of preemption do apply, and I believe it was the case of,
No, I'm with you that, you know, this is obviously an express preemption. It's not a debatable preemption case, but it fits into their narrative is, well, It's a preemptive act that creates a broad exception, arguably, to a much broader rule that generally you can tax just about anything you want to tax in this nation.
I think I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'm just looking for, I get both arguments. I'm just trying to figure out if either side has authority or precedent that would support it.
I think the authority, Your Honor, would be that, apologize one moment. In particular, Your Honor, a couple of cases. I guess, Your Honor, the short answer is, and I'm sorry, the case escapes me, but the short answer is that with respect to this federal preemption, if you look at the plain language of the statute, it's going to tell you the scope of the preemption. Now, this isn't an exemption from tax. In other words, so we didn't start with a tax.
A federal tax that's being exempted by a federal tax exemption, right? I get
correct.
That.
And so where we ended up is we have a broad we have a preemption, mm-hmm. and the preemption means what it says: taxes on internet access are prohibited. And then you go ahead, and the only perhaps exemption or exception is what I'm going to talk about in a minute, which is the grandfather clause, which is the subject of that appeal. Because the grandfather clause that's contained in the plain language of the Internet Tax Freedom Act goes ahead and it tells you what types of taxes are excluded, exempted, from that otherwise plain language preemption of the statute. And so kind of moving on with that theme, so once you get past that the trial court found that this was, the BPOL tax was a tax on internet access, the trial court then made a second ruling where they said that the burden of proof in this case was on the county to show that the tax was grandfathered. And once the court determined that the BPOL tax was a tax on internet access, what the county said is the burden now shifts to the county to prove its affirmative defense that the BPOL tax is grandfathered. The county pled an affirmative defense in this case that the BPOL tax was indeed grandfathered. Now, the county argues that the trial court was wrong to require it to prove that affirmative defense because taxpayers bear the burden of proof when challenging tax assessments. However, in this case, Cox met its burden of proof when the trial court ruled on summary judgment that this was a tax on internet access and was preempted. It was then up to the county to raise the issue of the grandfather clause and explain or prove why its tax met the requirements of that grandfather clause. Now, turning to the grandfather clause itself, which really makes up the heart of this appeal, the trial court ruled that the county's ordinance did meet the requirements of the grandfather clause. And it's that ruling that's incorrect. And it's incorrect because it's incorrect based on the plain language of the statute. There were two ways that a county could have been, well, there were two requirements to be grandfathered. First, the county had to have a tax that was enacted prior to 1998. No one debates that the BPOL tax existed prior to October 1st, 1998. But the second requirement required something else. The second requirement required a county to do one of two things. First, a county could have generally collected its tax before October 1st, 1998. The trial court in this case made a factual ruling and found that the county did not generally collect its tax prior to October 1st, 1998. The second thing that the county had to do for its tax to be preempted was that, and this is a long requirement, a taxing jurisdiction must have gave a provider of internet access services a reasonable opportunity to know by virtue of a rule or public proclamation made by the appropriate administrative agency of the state or political subdivision thereof that the agency interpreted and applied its tax to internet access. So I needed two things. I needed a law that enacted the tax, and I needed a rule or a public proclamation that did all each of those things. The ruling, the trial court's ruling that the county ordinance itself satisfied all of those requirements was incorrect for four reasons. First, the trial court conflated the grandfather clause's two requirements into one. If I look at the plain language of the Internet Tax Freedom Act, what I see in that act is that I required a law that authorized the tax, and then in subsection B of the Internet Tax Freedom Act, I needed a rule or public proclamation.
Why is subsection B even there? Because the general proposition is that every man is presumed to know the law. So if there is a law satisfying A, there is an imputed knowledge that everyone knows the law. So what's the explanation for B's purpose?
Congress required something more. Congress recognized that there were 30,000 taxing jurisdictions, and they used vague phrases like online services or telecommunications or a host of other phrases. And Congress recognized that it wasn't clear at all what taxes did or did not apply to this new thing in 1998 that was the Internet. And so Congress said, if you've got a statute, if you're not generally imposing and actually collecting your tax, that would be one way to be grandfathered. If you're not doing that, and the trial court in this case found the Fairfax County was not doing that, then you needed something more. Then we needed to protect interstate commerce. Congress did this under its Commerce Clause powers. You needed to have this rule or public proclamation on top of an ordinance if you weren't generally collecting the tax.
Would your argument be the same, counsel, if the ordinance had said we're going to tax internet access? Why would you need a proclamation then to say we're going to tax internet access?
If it would be the same, Your Honor, and the reason it would be the same, if the county had come out and just very clearly in 1996, which is when this ordinance was last enacted, if the county had said we tax internet access, but then didn't actually collect the tax from anybody, so in other words, for whatever reason.
Well, I'm looking now just at the necessity of a proclamation, a statute and a proclamation. If the statute is crystal clear, internet access, why would they need a proclamation?
Because there were jurisdictions at that time, between 1996 and 1998, that did have taxes that arguably applied to internet access or did apply on its face to internet access. But some jurisdictions had chosen not to collect them, to hold off on collecting those taxes because Congress was considering enacting the Internet Tax Freedom Act. And what Congress said, again under its interstate commerce authority, was that we need two requirements. If either you had to generally collect the tax and you had to prove that you were generally collecting the tax, and you need a public rule or proclamation. I'd submit, Your Honor, that the need for those two requirements is unambiguous. Plain language of the law says I need both. And if you don't have both, you're reading one of those requirements out of the statute.
What is the vehicle a locality in Virginia would use? Because if you're a state regulatory agency similar to federal regulatory agency, there's notice and comment. Everybody knows where to look. Oh, here's a proposed regulation. It's flawed in this way. Let me weigh in and have my views heard. With a locality, I'm not aware of a similar vehicle. So what are they supposed to do?
In this case, Your Honor, it would have been the Department of Tax and Fee Administration. So that's the agency.
It is the agency, but I'm not aware of an established channel where if I'm a taxpayer, I know to look for this website. I know to look for this publication that tells me, oh, wait a minute. They want to tax me on this, and I don't think I should have to pay it or pay as much or whatever. That's the practical awkwardness of that argument in my mind.
And you're correct, Your Honor. Unlike federal law or even Virginia state law, there's no formal rulemaking process here to go and look at. But the Department of Tax and Fee Administration can and actually did in this case make interpretations of the tax. So in this very case, they made a ruling that Cox should have collected taxes on internet access prior to October 1, 1998. The Fairfax County Board of Supervisors, following the ordinance, could have gone ahead and adopted a resolution of sorts. There were vehicles for a rule or public proclamation to be issued. The county just didn't avail itself of any of those vehicles. The other important thing about the rule or public proclamation is that The plain language of the Internet Tax Freedom Act requires that the public rule or proclamation actually interpret the tax to apply to receipts from Internet access. I don't have a public rule or proclamation. I don't have a document that interprets the tax to apply to receipts from Internet access. And I didn't have anything, any sort of notice from any administrative body that this ordinance applied to receipts from Internet access.
Bottom line on your argument is no one really knew whether or not these beep poll taxes applied to these kinds of brand new technologies. In fact, we're debating subsection A already today on your very case. So it's not enough to have a statute there. The common law presumption every man knows the law is great until we all look around and go, actually, we don't know the law. So we need somebody to make it clear other than the lawmaker, because it's obviously not been made clear by the lawmaker.
That's exactly right, Your Honor, and that's what Congress said. What's also interesting is the county's two positions in this case are diametrically inconsistent, and here's what I mean by that. The county argues that the beep poll tax is not a tax on Internet access, and at the same time, the county argues that they generally imposed and actually enforced the tax on Internet access prior to October 1st, 1998, as the statute required. So which is it? Did I generally impose and actually enforce a tax on Internet access and issue a public proclamation to that effect prior to October 1st, 1998? Or was it not a tax on Internet access? The county has said since early on in the administrative appeal process that this isn't even a tax on Internet access. And so we didn't have to issue any sort of public proclamation. But that's inconsistent with the trial court's ruling that that you did issue a public rule or proclamation. With that, Your Honors, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, please.
All right, you have 4 minutes and 26 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. My name is Daniel Robinson, appearing on behalf of the Appalese, Fairfax County, and Board of Supervisors of Fairfax County. As we just heard from appellant's counsel, we're here based on their petition for appeal to this court, which raised three assignments of error, all of which addressed a trial court's ruling after the presentation of evidence and the testimony of witnesses. For that reason, that trial court's ruling must be given the benefit of the doubt. It cannot be set aside unless there is clear error without evidence to support it, and all inferences at this stage should be granted in favor of the county.
Is your beep poll ordinance a tax on Internet access?
Well, it's an interesting question.
Well, it should have a yes or no answer.
The beep poll ordinance is not a tax on Internet access.
Okay, then when and at what time and in what way did you ever advertise it publicly as a tax on Internet access?
The county has an order. So it's a fundamental question of whether a beep poll tax is a tax on a good or service sold, in this case, the service of Internet access. The county's position is legally, the beep poll tax, as identified by this court in the Short Brothers opinion years ago, a beep poll tax is not a tax on any particular good or service sold. It's a business.
So your position is it's not a tax on Internet access, but you did give the public notice that it was a tax on Internet access. How is that reconcilable?
Because we gave the public notice that our beep poll tax applies to revenues earned from providing Internet access, and we gave that opinion
but
we're
not asking a question about the grandfather clause if the statute isn't applicable to begin with. You can do whatever you want to do with your beep poll.
That is correct. And yet the county, unlike many jurisdictions, if you took a survey of jurisdictions across Virginia, many beep poll ordinances do not go into the detail and specificity that Fairfax County's does. We set forth specific businesses and industries whose gross receipts would be subject to our beep poll tax. Included among them were any business that offered online computer services. That was set forth in multiple ordinances prior to October 1, 1998. So the legal question of whether ITFA prohibits the beep poll tax is the question, is it a tax on Internet access? If this court finds it is a tax on Internet access, then you look to our ordinance and say, well, did we give taxpayers a reasonable opportunity to know that
That's
our
section
tax...
Section A, you have an ordinance, which is a local statute, but Section B is in addition to that. Why would Section B have any ink following it at all if the statute was self-proclamating?
Two responses to that, Your Honor. So Section A requires a statute. In Virginia, as a Dillon's Rule jurisdiction, we need a statute from the state to even allow Fairfax County to have the tax in the first place. So the statute that authorizes the tax is the statute from the Commonwealth of Virginia. Once that statute
is
enacted...
The Commonwealth of Virginia statute doesn't say it applies, the BPOL applies to internet access. It just says you can do a BPOL law.
Correct. The BPOL tax is authorized by statute in the first place, and it's a tax of general application that applies to almost every industry on its face. There's specific carve-outs, so unless it's preempted some other way. So at that, and no locality has to apply their BPOL tax to every industry. They have the ability to exempt certain businesses from that BPOL tax. Fairfax County at the time specified, once we had that enabling legislation from the state, the county's Board of Supervisors passed an ordinance that addressed our BPOL tax. We addressed the model requirements.
So is your argument, counsel, that the state statute is the statute and your ordinance is the proclamation?
That is correct. Yes.
Did you make that argument to the trial court? I didn't see that.
The issue of the statute being enacted was stipulated. We didn't have to argue that specific issue to the trial court. The parties stipulated that we were authorized by statute to pass a BPOL tax.
But state statute does not impose any tax. It just authorizes localities to do whatever they want to do, and they can impose it on whoever they want to impose it on, essentially.
Correct, and that subsection A only requires that a statute authorize the tax. It doesn't require that we impose it. And so we were authorized, and then the Board of Supervisors of Fairfax County...
Was that the trial court's finding? It seemed to me that the trial court's finding was that the ordinance satisfied both the statute requirement and the proclamation requirement.
As I read the trial court's finding, whether there was a statute that authorized it was stipulated, so the trial court didn't need to reach a finding on that issue. The question is, was there a public proclamation that gave taxpayers the reasonable opportunity to know that Fairfax County interpreted its tax to apply to receipts earned from internet access? In this situation, a county in Virginia, its government is a Board of Supervisors. As we cited in our brief, the term public proclamation is defined in Black's Law Dictionary as an official pronouncement made by the government. The only governing body of Fairfax County is its Board of Supervisors, and there's only three ways through which it can make a proclamation: through a motion, a resolution, or an ordinance.
Is the Board of Supervisors an administrative agency of the Commonwealth of Virginia or an administrative agency of a political subdivision thereof?
It's the governing body of the political subdivision of
Fairfax
County.
I'm asking, is it an administrative agency of the Commonwealth of Virginia or an administrative agency of a political subdivision thereof?
For the purposes of ITFA, yes, it would have to be. There is no agency in Fairfax County. Unlike the federal government, where you might have the IRS or some other agency that has such power, or even in Virginia, the Virginia Department of Taxation, to questions earlier, can issue regulations. In Fairfax County, there is no agency or department that has any authority to issue a proclamation. That's not the way Virginia government is set up.
Well, maybe the conferees that wrote this thing didn't know that. But so what? That's what they said.
Correct. Well, I think they wrote it in a broad way to apply to all the different types of applicable laws that could be across this country. I mean, Virginia is a strict Dillon's rule state, unlike many of the other states. So Fairfax County cannot simply create an agency with authority to make proclamations. There's only one agency. That's the Board of Supervisors. They issued this ordinance multiple times prior to October 1, 1998.
It's an agency. The Board of Supervisors is an agency of the Commonwealth of Virginia?
Of the Fairfax County. They're the appropriate agency for Fairfax County to be able to issue a public proclamation.
Has our court ever characterized a governing body as an agency of the municipality?
To my knowledge, I don't know of any such time. But this court has also not addressed the Internet Tax Freedom Act before, where the Congress used this specific term. There's simply no other... If that's the interpretation, then there is no way that any locality in Virginia could have satisfied this test, because they are the only agency that combined. They're the only entity that combined a county. That's our Board of Supervisors.
Why can't the Board of Supervisors just authorize the tax people in their city to issue a proclamation? What's wrong with that?
So I suppose essentially you could pass an ordinance to allow our Director of Tax Administration to issue a separate proclamation?
The city manager walks down the hall and says, who's in charge of the tax? Oh, I am. Okay, we'll issue some public thing saying that the Board of Supervisors interprets its statute, its ordinance, to say that we can do this.
Well, with all due respect, our Board of Supervisors one individual member can't speak for the board.
Okay,
the board
okay, so a resolution. They do a resolution. Resolution. City manager tells somebody in the taxing department to issue a public proclamation. What's so hard about that?
They could, but I think an ordinance is the better way. Of those, between a resolution and an ordinance has strict advertising and notice requirements. They're going to put notice out to everybody through an advertisement in a newspaper, through multiple postings at the government center, to say, we're considering an ordinance that's going to say our tax applies to online computer services. If they did a resolution, that wouldn't have to be advertised at all. You might not have, you know, like the meeting the other day. There's about 20 people at our Board of Supervisors meeting. But if you put notice out there through an ordinance, as the county did, you're likely to get more taxpayers in there to offer their opinion on whether this ordinance should be passed or not. So for that reason, the public proclamation was satisfied by the county adopting an ordinance. But to the extent Cox claims that the ordinance itself didn't provide a reasonable opportunity to know that the county interpreted its tax to apply to internet access, that simply conflicts with the evidence presented at trial, as well as language in the legislative history cited by Cox, and the language in ITFA. Because the evidence at trial established that prior to October 1, 1998, the trial court found in the record that the county imposed its BPOL tax on America Online Inc., AOL, which touted itself as the world's largest internet subscriber base at the time. There's no dispute that AOL, which was headquartered in the county prior to October 1, 1998, sourced a substantial number of its gross receipts to Fairfax County, which Fairfax County assessed and AOL paid. In fact, over $299 million was sourced to Fairfax County in 1 year, and the county imposed its tax on AOL, pursuant to the same provision of the ordinance that imposed a tax on online computer services. Perhaps the most compelling piece of evidence on this, and again, this is evidence introduced at trial, is AOL's own Form 10-K, which clarified that it made two types of revenues. And the type of revenue that it earned from providing internet access, it called online service revenue, almost the exact same terminology used by Fairfax County in its ordinance. So we have evidence of the leader, the biggest internet service provider at the time, called these types of revenue online service revenue. The county used the term online computer services. It's almost verbatim. We just included the term computer, which by definition is necessary for the internet.
But wouldn't that argument be a great argument if there was a subsection C that said, even if there's no proclamation by an agency, even if there's nothing stated publicly, even if it's not generally collected, this one taxpayer paid it, he must have thought it was collectible.
Well, I think it goes to the totality of the evidence at trial. So is the term online computer services readily understandable to mean the provision of internet access? And I think that was some of the evidence, is that if the leader in the industry calls it the same thing, then we use the right terminology for the time period in the mid-90s. Indeed, the evidence at trial showed that Cox itself paid the BPOL tax without ever claiming that this ordinance was ambiguous or confusing, and that they paid under the same provision of the ordinance as AOL did. But again, I'd like to point out that the House report, to the extent where they rely on legislative history, the very House report cited by Cox in its brief, ITFA's proponents said a locality should state that its tax applies to internet access or online services. Again, almost the same language. Also state that that same proponent said that determination...
Does your tax do that?
Excuse me?
Does your BPOL tax apply to internet access services?
Online computer services is broad enough to include internet access. As I pointed out in the brief and in the definition of internet access means a service that enables users to access content, information, electronic mail, or other services offered over the internet. May also include access to proprietary content, information, and other services as packages of services offered to users.
So it's governed by the 1998 statute then?
Excuse me?
It's then governed by the statute, the Internet Tax Freedom Act.
Right, but the counties said that online computer services, it includes that term internet access. And that same House report stated that online services means the provision of services combined with internet access. So if you're offering online services, you're offering internet access. But I also like to say one last piece on the grandfather clause in that legislative history is in that House report, they stated that when a locality makes a determination on whether it interprets its tax to apply to internet access for the purposes of the grandfather clause, that decision, quote, should be made by duly elected representatives rather than by the singular action of a tax administrator. That's exactly what the county did here. The duly elected representatives, after notice and hearing, adopted an ordinance finding that online computer services were subject to our tax. Based on the understanding of the industry and ITFA's proponents at the time, online services includes the provision of internet access.
Committee reports are not law, and committee reports are often written by the outside people.
I agree. We don't need to rely on that law. To the extent Cox relies on legislative history, it's a report they cited in their brief. I'm bringing that up that it counters their argument, but the evidence established that the industry leader used the same term as well. It's just it was well known that the term online services would include the provision of internet access. But again, so that I think we satisfy the grandfather clause, but I also don't think that the tax is a tax on internet access. Now, getting to your question earlier about the preemption, the exemption, I'll avoid the exemption part for right now because I think I see where the court is going with that. But with respect to whether it's a preemption or not, as we cited in our brief, in National Private Truck Council versus Oklahoma Tax Commissioner 515 U.S. 582, the United States Supreme Court has traditionally observed that there's a presumption against federal interference with state taxation. So that's our starting point. There's a presumption against this preempting our tax. Moreover, even though the Supreme Court has recently addressed the issue of whether there's a presumption in express preemption cases, recently the Third Circuit in Shuker versus Smith and Nephew, 885 F3rd 760, said that if it's an area of law traditionally governed by the states, even in express preemption, there's a presumption against preemption. We're dealing with state tax, a law traditionally governed by the states. There's a presumption against preemption. And as stated in Bates versus Dow AgroSciences LLC, 544 U.S. 431, if the text of an express preemption clause is subject to multiple interpretations, courts accept the reading that disfavors preemption. So whether we look at it as a presumption against preemption or just the plain language of ITFA, it's not the BPOL tax is not a tax on internet access. We know that because ITFA defines internet access to mean a service. So is our BPOL tax a tax on a service?
So the federal statute doesn't apply at all. Not its exemptions, not its blanket rules, not its exceptions. It doesn't apply at all.
It doesn't apply to a BPOL tax levied by a locality in Virginia.
So at what point in time did you, if that's your position, did your county say to the public, we are going to apply it to, we're going to apply our BPOL tax to exactly this phenomenon?
The county has never stopped imposing its BPOL tax on revenue on businesses that earn revenue from providing internet access, from AOL in the early to mid-90s through Cox today. The county has imposed its BPOL tax on these businesses because ITFA does not provide a blanket prohibition against taxation of an internet service provider. And the BPOL tax, as this court held in Short Brothers, is a business activities tax measured by revenues earned by a business, but it is not a tax on it that good or service sold. Here, the service being sold is internet access. We're measuring the size of a business because you have the privilege of coming into the county, you're going to use county resources. So how do we measure how much resources you use? Gross receipts is a proxy, but it's not a tax on those gross receipts. This court in Dulles Duty Free addressed the impact of the import-export clause, and that's what the trial court looked at, and that's what the tax commissioner looked at. But this court noted that it was bound by U.S. Supreme Court precedent in the Richfield Oil decision that had a specific test. This court also noted that the import-export clause had a very broad impact. And as we cited in our brief, the United States Supreme Court in Wilcutz versus Bunn noted that the import-export clause is a complete bar to taxation on an importer and provides immunity to the process of exporting. Contrast that with ITFA, which does not prohibit a tax on an internet service provider, only a tax on internet access. So neither Fairfax County nor the Commonwealth of Virginia impose a sales tax on those sales of internet access. That's what ITFA is getting at. It's not getting at measuring a taxable base. And as we pointed out in our brief, there's multiple United States Supreme Court opinions that state you can impose a tax that is measured by otherwise tax-exempt property, even if you couldn't impose a direct tax on that piece of property or a sale of that property. And that's essentially where we're at here. And if you look across the United States at various other jurisdictions, a business tax can be measured by the number of employees they have, the number of square footage that a business occupies. These are just different ways to measure the size of a business. But nobody would ever claim that because you measured the tax on 15 different employees, that's a tax on internet access, or because we have a 5,000 square foot office, that's a tax on internet access. But these are all just different ways to measure the size of a business, and they don't convert that into a tax on internet access. For all of these reasons, because the import-export clause at issue in Dulles Duty Free must be construed so broad because it impacts a federal constitutional right, and because the Richfield Oil decision specifically stated that a state court's characterization of a tax controls if that constitutional right is not at issue, and because this court in Short Brothers said This tax is not a tax on the transaction of the thing sold. The BPOL tax is not a tax on the service of internet access being sold by Cox. Therefore, ITFA doesn't apply. I'd like to briefly address the county's last two assignments of Crossair. One of those was the court's imposition of the burden of proof on Fairfax County to prove that it was entitled to the grandfather clause. The posture of this case is that each party appealed a decision of the tax commissioner, but only Fairfax County only appealed that portion of the tax commissioner's decision that addressed whether ITFA applied to the BPOL tax. Only Cox appealed that portion that addressed the grandfather clause. So only Cox put that issue before the circuit court, and per statute, Cox would have the burden to overcome that tax commissioner's ruling, which refused to address the county's assessments on the issue of the grandfather clause. Over 100 years of this court's jurisprudence shows that a taxpayer has the burden of proof to show that a tax assessment is invalid or otherwise illegal, which is essentially what they are claiming before the tax commissioner and when they appealed the tax commissioner's ruling. As the party who put that at issue, Cox should have the burden of proof in the trial court. Also note that in record number 210942, a taxpayer related to appellant appealed a decision of the Norfolk Circuit Court recently to this court, where the Norfolk Circuit Court put the burden of proof on the taxpayer to prove that the grandfather clause did not apply to the locality. This court entered an order on April 27, 2022 that found no reversible error in that ruling. Finally, on that final prong, whether the county generally collected its tax.
Does that order have precedential effect?
It does not, Your Honor. It does not. On that final prong, whether it was generally collected, the trial court found as a fact that the county taxed AOL for its online services for many years prior to October 1, 1998. It found as a fact that AOL had the largest subscriber base of any internet service provider in the country, and that any business who had a physical presence in Fairfax County and sourced its receipts to Fairfax County was taxed. There was a question over whether Prodigy and Roadrunner were taxed by Fairfax County, but there was absolutely no evidence that those businesses existed in Fairfax County, and under the law, Fairfax County cannot impose a tax on a business that's not physically located in Fairfax. For that reason, Fairfax proved it imposed its tax on 100% of the businesses that it could have imposed its tax on prior to October 1, 1998. For all of those reasons, we ask that this court uphold the trial court's ruling. Alternatively, find that ITFA simply does not apply to the county's BPOL tax and find in favor of the county. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, a few quick points.
I have a question before you start, counsel. You characterize the trial court's ruling as conflating statute and ordinance. The county says no such thing happened. There was a stipulation that there was a statute in place, and therefore the ordinance satisfies the proclamation prong. Tell me why that's incorrect.
The stipulation was that the ordinance existed, not that the ordinance applied to, that the state statute existed, not that the state statute applied a tax to the BPOL. The state statute was just an enabling statute. It was the ordinance that actually enacted the tax on internet access. And so I needed that ordinance and I needed the rule or public proclamation in addition.
And some localities have no BPOL tax. So just because there's an enabling statute doesn't mean there even is a BPOL tax.
Exactly right, Your Honor. You needed to have the local ordinance enacting the BPOL tax for it to apply at all. So that's where you get the two different requirements. All we stipulated too was that there was a state enabling statute. Second piece, Mr. Robinson made this statement that the Internet Tax Freedom Act only applies to taxes on internet access, not on providers of internet access. That's actually not true. In the definition, in the preemption, the Internet Tax Freedom Act actually applies to both providers of internet access and taxes imposed on consumers of internet access. That's in the plain language of the Internet Tax Freedom Act itself. Quick note about AOL. The trial court made this factual finding that the county didn't collect its tax, didn't generally impose and actually enforce, collect its tax from internet service providers prior to October 1st, 1998. Yes, there was some evidence that AOL paid tax on some of its receipts, but not all of its receipts. There was also evidence that there were other internet service providers providing internet access service to people in the county, and they didn't collect the tax. So there was evidence of some people collecting, some people not.
But there was no evidence those other people had a status in the county.
Correct. The county didn't put forth any evidence at all to that effect.
And so there's no evidence one way or the other as to whether they're in the same category as AOL.
And there was an awful lot of testimony from the county auditor, and this is why it's hard, this court, the standard we look at a factual ruling like that is clearly erroneous, because the court also heard testimony from the county auditor itself that in the context of online computer services, the auditor said, well, online computer services could mean a lot of things. The auditor said it could have meant software as a service things. It could have meant payment applications. The auditor testified straight out that this county ordinance could have meant a number of different things, and some people were paying it and some people weren't. That was why I think the court found that it wasn't generally collected as required under the Internet Tax Freedom Act. There's another piece of this that we haven't talked about, and I'd at least like to mention. Prior to the Internet Tax Freedom Act coming out, so the Internet Tax Freedom Act was October 1st, 1998. In April 1st of 1998, the Virginia House of Delegates issued a joint resolution that said that Virginia and its political subdivisions do not impose or shall remain free of taxes on Internet access. So when we get to this prong about it, what a reasonable ISP should know as required by the statute, yes, you had AOL paying taxes on some receipts from Internet access, but an Internet service provider would have had no idea about that because those tax records are confidential. That's not in the public domain. What an Internet service provider would have known is that the Virginia House of Delegates in April of 1998 issued a joint resolution saying there were no taxes on Internet access. That was the interpretive guidance that was in the public domain at that time. Last point, Your Honor, on preemption, which I didn't adequately address when you asked it. One of the cases I'd cite is the Aloha Airlines case, which I think is a interpretative of both the preemption and the application of the BPOL tax. In Dulles, the court said that the first thing when a federal statute unambiguously forbids the state from imposing a particular kind of tax on an industry affecting interstate commerce, courts don't look beyond the plain language of the statute.
All right. So, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. This court is adjourned.
All rise.